We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm up your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
What is up, CMOS girlies? It's a Tuesday. Emma and I are live, laugh, loving from New York City, delivering you another beautiful podcast. The sun is shining in New York. The tulips are out. I can't complain about the weather in this intro. How are you doing, Emma?
I'm doing good. I kind of feel like I've been half of a human today. I've just been honestly experiencing a little bit of brain fog, if you want to call it that. I also feel like we haven't potted in a while, but that's because we pre-recorded. So Kate and I are both like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. I'm good. Yeah, it's finally spring here. I was in Boston for the Boston Marathon, which was really lovely. It was like a very warm, balmy day of the race. My boyfriend did great. I got called out though for how I was pronouncing one of the bakeries that I went to in Boston. I thought it was called Tate, and some girl was like, Emma, it's pronounced like latte, so I guess it's tate, but I would have never known that through reading it, and I just think it was very funny and comical. That place was really good, so shout out to whoever recommended that to me. I went to Cambridge Naturals, had an amazing experience at that little health store, so if you live in Boston, go to it. I don't really visit health stores anymore just because there's not that many in Williamsburg, and that's where I'm spending most of my time now. And I just don't really care to walk around health stores and look at the same supplements that haven't changed in over 10 years with my free time. But I really feel like they had so many incredible products that I haven't really seen, or stuff that you just see a pop-up grocer or that snack shots will talk about. But they had a really good herbal bulk section, and they had a big massive container of coconut oil that you could buy in bulk. And so this older woman who was probably in her late 70s was scooping out coconut oil into her mason jar, and I was I hope I am you in the next 30 to 40 years. But other than that, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good too. Yeah. Potting feels like a new muscle that I'm working today. I'm kind of out of the loop as well. I was in Brooklyn and I was thinking about Perlandra Natural Foods though, which is a health store. It's in a different part of Brooklyn, but I was now it's city bike season, so maybe I head over there. My spring updates, I have a marathon this weekend, which I feel like I've been talking about. Well, I have been talking about it for 2 years because I was going to run it last year, but I got injured. So I finally am excited to cross that off the list. I feel like it's going to be a huge weight off my shoulders once I finish this race. Very excited for it. I've been experiencing pain and injuries the past 2 months, so it's kind of made me anxious, nervous, not as excited. But I think this past week, now that I'm okay, it's officially here, I'm going to pack my suitcase, all of that stuff, I think once I'm on the airplane, it will feel real, or maybe not even then. Maybe if I'm in the hotel, it'll feel real. I don't know. But it's a no spectator course, so it's just going to be me by myself chilling. So this week is just resting, recovering, eating the same, managing stress, and kind of getting all my ducks in a row, we shall say. but I've been city biking like a fiend in New York City. My latest update on city biking is like you can check your stats, and like I've been treating it like it's Strava. I go from like the same city bike station from my place to my boyfriend's place in Brooklyn, and so I'm taking the exact two stations, and I've been trying different routes to get the fastest bike ride to like PR essentially my bike ride to his place. And I think I'm at almost 10 minutes, which is kind of astonishing from going from like Manhattan, I won't disclose where I live, to a certain part of Brooklyn. And it's been a lot of fun. But you know, we are in coming apart of the season when everyone's going to be on city bikes. You know, during the winter, not a lot of people do it because it's cold, your hands will freeze, etc. But in the summer, it's like everyone and their mother and also their drunk roommate will get on a city bike and like go across the town. So it's kind of a chaotic time, but I'm excited to see everyone out and about New York again.
I'm obsessed with the city bike app and also like looking at your stats too. I city bike to swim for girlies who don't know. And like I routinely will like try to beat my time each time. And I think I've gotten it down to like 13 minutes on a regular city bike, which I'm like, I don't know how I like
Wow.
managed to bike that fast. But yeah, it's honestly terrifying seeing like so many people bike around. There was like a big swarm of kids the other day that were like honestly biking in the streets like so lawlessly, and I was like, this is like honestly a threat to like society, this is like a
Yeah.
danger. I guess getting into a few of my other intro points, I was at Trader Joe's the other day because I just like needed to get groceries, and I was like, no, I'm just gonna like go to different sections, see what's up. And this is definitely probably not a new product and everyone has like likely had it, but it's this beverage called Agua de Kefir, and I guess it's by GT's, which I didn't realize when I bought it because it doesn't really have like anything that mentions GT. But it's a water kefir beverage and has like natural electrolytes, and their website will obviously explain in greater detail what the beverage is. But I think the flavor I had was like orange, pear, mango, or something around that, and it was like so effing good. I'm like, honestly, I think it's better than regular kombucha. I feel like kombucha, this might sound crazy, but I feel like it's like almost like too heavy sometimes. And this felt like really refreshing and light. So for people who live near Trader Joe's, definitely try and find it. I don't know where else it's carried, but it was like exciting to discover like a new fun beverage because we are definitely in, you know, fun, silly little beverage season now that it's like warm out and you like want to drink something that's like cold and not water. And I guess kind of my last more like meaningful point on for the intro is like allowing yourself to slow down. This is something that I certainly struggle with. I feel like I've constantly just been like a go, go, go person. And perhaps it's just like me running on like ultra high cortisol like 24/7. And like I don't want to know how that is like terribly damaging my body in a myriad of ways. But this past Saturday, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna like have a day to myself and like not feel rushed with anything. So like after swim lessons, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do the things that I want to do, because usually I'm like, I need to get home, I need to do this XYZ. And it was just like so nice just like having a day with like no plans and just kind of like allowing myself to like almost be a kid again. I feel like it's like really easy to feel like you like have to optimize your weekends or constantly have like a packed schedule. And I'm not saying that I have like a very social life by any means, but I always feel this like sense of pressure that I need to like do a bunch of things and I need to rush home to do whatnot. So yeah, it was just like nice to slow down. And I'm sure this is like something that a lot of CMS girlies can probably relate to because we're all like probably have a little bit of like type A energy within us. And I just think in the summertime, it's like now when I walk home from work, I'm like wanting to like enjoy the stroll because it's nice out versus like in the winter, it's like I want to rush home and be a couch potato. So yeah, I just feel like this probably comes with no surprise, but just spring and summer, wow, what it
What a
does to your like
difference.
mental health.
Every year I forget. Every year I forget that we do winter and then some summer and spring are just so glorious. I agree on that. There's also a TikTok I saw that really put things into perspective, and it was talking about how like screen time limits are stupid. I've personally never set like the screen time limits because I know myself and I know I would just click override and like continue on my way on my phone. Yeah, it's an issue of like my own self, but I'm also a content creator, so whatever. But this one content creator made a video and it was like, instead of having screen time limits that like say, you know, however they present on their phone, it should say you spent like 60 minutes looking at the world today. Like if it said something like that of like you were 60 minutes involved in your life and your day-to-day whatever experience, I feel like more of us would be like, holy shit, I am locked into my phone, not even looking at the trees and like the people and everything around me. So that's been something I'm trying to do on the weekend, like I don't need to be on my phone, but I think I have this underlying anxiety, like, ooh, I'm like a content creator, like I have to be answering DMs like within like 20 minutes, and realistically I don't need to do that. So I've been trying to set better boundaries on myself with social media stuff. So I love that for us. I love the slowing down. Speaking of slowing down, my digestive system has been slowing down. No, it's just, having a boyfriend and going out to eat more. I am loving it and it's great. But I'm certainly not eating the amount of fiber and vegetables, which I think Emma mentioned previously with her experience with her boyfriend as well. We love it. We're totally fine here. But one thing that has been my saving grace is I'm gonna give you a few like bloating. I don't like talking about bloating because I feel like it's just like stupid body checking bullshit, but bloating can hurt. So that's like what I'm talking about. Cause there's sometimes when like I truly want to unbutton my pants at dinner because it hurts like what I'm wearing. So I've been packing digestive enzymes. This is something that I got into, which I'm gonna talk about later because I'm gonna talk about veganism in this episode. But when I became unvegan, we shall say, and wanted to start eating like plant or animal foods again. Obviously my body hadn't been eating things like meat and fish, so like it wasn't going to know what to do with it, and I got recommended to take digestive enzymes from this health food co-op guy, like this co the owner of the store over in the West Village. So took digestive enzymes and I've been having them in this little pill bottle like in my purse. If I did a little what's in my bag video, it would be like my lip gloss, my little weed pen, some edibles, some chewing gum, and my digestive enzymes. So that's been like my CMOS girly life hack of the week. And then something that is not a product you have to go and buy, but like stretching when you're bloated. Even if you're just like laying down and kind of like flopping around a little bit, like you can look up different stretches to do. Definitely can help with pain relief because it's no fun to be bloated, especially when you're like out and about, like hanging out.
Hilarious because I literally had this conversation with my boyfriend this morning that I was like, I like don't love that, like I feel so backed up after like a few days of like, us having like our fun food moments and it's like lovely and everything. But I'm like, yeah, it there is like a reason why we're supposed to eat fiber and like a certain amount of it. I'm literally buying these digestive enzymes because sometimes my stomach just feels like rocks and it's just like you feel very extended and it is uncomfortable. And like bloating is obviously natural, but there's also certain types of bloating that are very unnatural and it's like very uncomfortable. And it like if it's literally eating into your like day-to-day life. So I'm going to need these. I kind of forgot about digestive enzymes. I remember years ago when we bought some like random digestive enzyme from that like hippie woo-woo health store in the East Village, and we like walked around and carried them. And I feel like
Such a
that
meme.
was just like a crazy moment. And I haven't had digestive enzymes next, but I'm inspired.
Yeah, and I think you and I should do like some sort of health store scope out in Brooklyn because you and I are
Yes.
both there so much, and we should like
Yes.
do the lay of the land because I feel like we did a Manhattan one like decades ago. But yeah, if you guys are ever in New York, you always can DM CMOS girlies asking for our recs. There's some of them that I personally try to gatekeep because I don't want people to go to them, but I
Yeah.
will let you know if you're a CMOS girly. That's the only way you get access to our best recommendations. But this podcast is going to be about attention span and veganism. So exciting, so relevant, so Gen Z of us. And we're not going to have a pod next week as Emma and I are both going to be traveling. I'll be running my marathon and Emma will be visiting family. So enjoy this week's pod. Go back and listen to some others if you miss us like that. Honored if you do miss us like that. I once again forget that people listen to us. But I'm going to call Emma back and then we'll get into this week's podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our next partner is a product that Emma and I take every single day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to find a greens powder that actually blended together. The taste is hands down the best greens powder I've been able to find. It even has a mild tropical taste, and you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, you name it.
For me, I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a supplement that actually tastes great. I've always known that taking a greens powder is a great addition to one's wellness routine, but I could just never get past the unpleasant taste. This completely changed once I started taking Athletic Greens. It tastes so good that I actually look forward to drinking it every morning, something I never knew was possible. Plus, Athletic Greens contains dairy-free probiotics, and let me tell you, my digestion has never been better.
Another thing that Emma and I love is that it's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing.
It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster just like us, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance.
In today's podcast, we will be discussing all of the latest about health and wellness for Gen Z. That's why we're excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of CMOS Girlies.
Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EES System. If you haven't heard of the EES System, you'll want to listen up.
This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New York City or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable, which is perfect for all CMOS girlies.
If you're interested in experiencing the EES system technology for yourself, you can go to unifiedhealing.com/CMOS to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/CMOS.
No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EES system.
All right, CMOS girlies, sit down, buckle up for this week's podcast episode. I'm going to be talking about veganism for the day. We've gotten a few DMs about this kind of like the past, I don't know, 6 months or so. Like, are Kate and Emma still vegan? Like, are the podcast hosts still vegan? Whatever, because I feel like we've made some memes about that. So not only going to clear that up that we are no longer vegan, but my question kind of the day is like, what happened to veganism? And certainly, like, you know, I am no longer vegan, so obviously I'm not involved in those communities. Like, I don't know, like, what's happening. Like, is Freely still popping off? Like, are people still going to Banana Island? Like, I don't know anymore. But I certainly feel like in my personal life and, you know, people that I associate myself with, that a lot of people that were vegan kind of earlier, like 2010s, like late 2010s, are no longer vegan. And I'm just curious about that trend and kind of what it means about like health and wellness at a larger angle. I also was thinking about like today, the day we're recording is Earth Day. And like the reason that I was personally drawn to veganism when I was in high school was like, I wanted to do something about, you know, what was happening to our planet and climate change. I was drawn to the appeal of like reducing your carbon footprint. And I think that ethos was just like shoved down our throats kind of in the 2010s, you know, and that phrase of like the individual carbon footprint, I forget who it was, if it's Exxon or BP, but big oil funded that kind of phrase and became commonplace in the United States for then us as individual consumers to think like, I have to go vote with my dollar. I have to go vegan to like save the planet, et cetera. And I think it became so commonplace that veganism seemed like a accessible thing for all of us to do to like help reduce climate change. And I certainly think like, this is not like going to be about like the politics of veganism and like, is veganism good for the planet, whatever. But many are drawn to veganism for this appeal for like lowering your carbon footprint. And that was like definitely what I was interested in. But I think now, like, a lot of us have stepped back and looked at wealth inequality in the world and kind of seen, like, you know, my dollar is not equal to, like, Taylor Swift's dollar, Jeff Bezos' dollars. There's a lot bigger players that can affect the planet than I can. So I think that could be a reason why veganism's, like, on the decline. But obviously, that in the background, like eating less red meat is very good. Eating less dairy or reducing how much of that you eat in your diet is definitely good for the earth. One of the biggest contributors to climate change is livestock. We did a whole podcast a long time ago about livestock, animal agriculture, et cetera. We've done a few on veganism, so you can scroll back if you want like more in-depth stuff about like the actual numbers of it. But global livestock production generates about 14.5% of all GHG emissions. Cattle's responsible for about like 65% of those emissions, largely as methane. If you don't know, fun fact, this used to be like one of my Hinge prompts when I was vegan. Like, Jesus Christ, the reason that I had this is like a fun fact. But like when cows and sheep digest food and when they burp, they produce methane. I don't know why I had that on my like fucking Hinge, but I was like, did you know that when like cows burp, it reduces or like produces methane in the world? God, how cringe of me. But that fact is true. That's why livestock does contribute to climate change. And, you know, global food consumption, the way that it is, could add like about 1% Celsius degree warming to, by like the year 2100, whatever. So 75% of this warming is going to be driven by food that are the high sources of methane, as I mentioned. So, like meat and dairy products. And all of these facts are very true in the background of like veganism kind of existing. So, it's not like we've learned that these things aren't true, that like livestock doesn't contribute to climate change. But at the same time, like a lot of less people are buying into this like claim about like environmental, you know, progress by going vegan. Once again, obviously people still are vegan. Like, let us know if you're still vegan. Awesome, great. Feel free to comment that on a meme. Like, good for you. But I think it's interesting too that there's more and more vegan options at restaurants and grocery stores in the past. Like, I remember in high school, you'd go to a restaurant, very common experience, like, oh, I'm gonna order a salad and some fries because they don't have anything that is a vegan option. Food technology and food accessibility. And food alternatives have become much more popular and much more well funded. Like if you think about it, all the soy milk and you know the black bean burgers that you could feel the different vegetables in that didn't have like a proper binding agent or really early like gluten-free snacks, they all were kind of shitty and they sucked. And like I think if you went vegan in the super early days, you were going to eat like whole food, plant-based diet. You probably weren't looking for like these high technology substitutes like the Beyond Burger or any of the kind of like real animal food mimicking products that we have now. So it's interesting that like even though we have all this like newer technology and like better vegan options, a lot less people aren't vegan anymore. And so I was thinking about like this decline of veganism, like why could it happen? Like why do I think it's happening? And I have a few reasons. But overall for population as like an estimate, there was a survey done by Ipsos in 2018 that said about 3% of the global population is vegan. So that makes like 230 million people. But The Guardian has like a little bit more conservative an estimate that it's about like 1% of the population. So roughly like 79 million people. I mean, that is going to be hard to actually know if that's like critical data, as we know, like Gen Z and Gen Alpha, like do not pick up landline phones to like answer polling anymore. Polling in like the digital age is actually really challenging to do. So like, I don't know if this is that accurate about veganism, but it definitely is on the decline. When people were in this like vegan boom, I would say, like when it felt like everyone and their mother was like requesting for milk alternatives and tofu and just like advanced food technology, I think there was more demand for the product, and that's where the better innovation came from. You know, once you could see that people were talking about veganism on the internet, there were different movements and stuff. I think food companies started to realize, like, wow, if we created a product, this would be a lot of money for us. As we know, like most corporations are kind of fueled by money at the end of the day. A lot of them have some semblance of ethics, but like if I'm a major food conglomerate and I see that so much of the market is trending towards being like plant-based or vegan, I better have an option for these people if I want to stay relevant and like make money and even like get in on it early. You know, I think about some of the early vegan brands that still are kind of tried and true, like Miyoko's butter and some of the early like plant milk stuff. Those guys they definitely are kind of staying around because they were so relevant. And I think people have like nostalgic memories of like some of these vegan foods, or like maybe if you had like a tofurkey at Thanksgiving, like maybe you've moved on and you're not eating a tofurkey. But if you're a vegan option that was there early on, I think people do have like an interesting buy-in and like loyalty to that. But here's some of the reasons why I think veganism is on the decline. None of these are backed up by data. This is just Kate's brain blabbing to you all. So I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this, or if you feel like people in your life are vegan still, and I'm kind of on like some crazy anti-vegan charade. I don't know. But I think number one, when we were in this beautiful echo chamber that I will call high carb, low fat veganism, all of the YouTubers like Freely the Banana Girl, High Carb, Low Fat Hannah, Durian Rider, whatever, all these people that were producing like vegan social media content. And I also want to caveat this with saying like, it certainly felt like a moment, but it definitely was an echo chamber because I will be talking to people like, oh my God, you guys remember high carb, low fat veganism? And some of my friends are like, no fucking idea what you're talking about. You could be speaking a foreign language to me at this point. So it felt really relevant for a lot of us sea moss girlies, but still in the background, like a lot of people were not in this sort of like moment on the internet. But I think with high carb, low fat veganism, which if you're not familiar, it was like a strain of veganism that was pretty popular in like the 2010s. And the idea was that the most healthy way to eat or the most optimal way to eat was having like 80% of your diet comes from carbs, 10% come from fat, and 10% come from protein. I honestly don't remember the reason of like why those ratios were chosen. Something about carbs being like the best for your body and the health, whatever, but like who fucking knows why they chose those percentages? So when everyone started to like eat this way, you wanted to have like 80% of your macronutrients coming from carbs and like 10 from protein, 10 from fat. So when you were planning your meals in the day, you pretty much had to have like only carbs on your plate. And so when you looked at these meal photos on the internet, like if you Google this, you will find crazy meal photos, but it would be like, I'm not kidding you, two russet potatoes and like a little bit of lettuce and a little bit of like watered down hummus. It would be like the most bizarre looking plate ever that you would see in this high carb, low fat veganism. And I think if you were following this, you started to realize this was making you very unhealthy because it was so restrictive. Like people were only eating like such bland foods, not complex meals. They were not eating like any micronutrients at all. And so I think when people were so deep into this like restrictive high carb, low fat veganism, which once again, not everyone like fell to that, but if you did, you're probably like looking at your family members while you were eating like three bananas and you're like, maybe I'm like, I shouldn't be eating this many potatoes or bananas in one sitting and I should eat different things. I think it was a very bizarre way of eating when it was happening. And I think if you were in that, like you probably just look back and were like, I should not be doing this. So you probably just ditched veganism as is. I think it's hard to get micronutrients as a vegan. This is not to say that you're going to lose all your muscle and you're going to lose all your bone health if you go vegan or something. I am not saying that at all. But it is hard to get all of the micronutrients and different things that you want going through your body when you are vegan. If you're not eating meat, really hard to get complete proteins. You know, you have to be eating rice and beans together and doing different like food combinations to get the proper amino acid ratios. And like, I understand this is nerd shit and like majority of the population does not care about all this like food combining type shit and not using food combining in like that type of way, but like eating different nutrients to make sure you're eating or you're getting everything filled as a vegan because it's easy to have like nutritional gaps. But I think it just becomes so taxing mentally. Like I did not want to worry about all of this. I didn't want to think about like I'm eating this food and I have to pair it with this in order to feel a certain way in my diet. I think veganism can be expensive. And once again, don't jump me. I'm not saying veganism is expensive, but when you are looking at alternatives and when you are looking at different groceries to buy, the vegan options and the gluten-free options are going to be more expensive because there is still less demand for them. They're not as commercially available. They're not as popular. Like pistachio milk and some of these like nut-based products are more expensive because cashews are super expensive to go and harvest. So I think that's a reason why a lot of people are not vegan. Also talking about like food apartheid and how that affects food access. I remember seeing a video like during the pandemic of someone talking about how expensive groceries are in Alaska. And they pulled up like a huge frozen bag of blueberries that I feel like in New York would be like $10, maybe $11. And these were like $45 that you would have to pay for frozen fruit, not even fresh fruit. So when you think about like all these beautiful smoothie bowls you see on Instagram and these vegan options, like how accessible truly is that? I think people have lost this ethos that I mentioned earlier of voting with your dollar. A lot of people realize like, there's inflation. We're in a recession. Like the wealth inequality in the country is crazy. I don't have time to go buy all this vegan stuff. I can't afford it. And I also really don't buy the idea that, like, if I'm eating tofu, I'm saving the planet. That's something that I internalized for a lot of my life. And it certainly does add up when you do eat a lot of meat. I'm not saying go out and eat like a raw meat diet right now, but I certainly think that someone eating one portion of meat or fish in a day is not ruining the planet. It's billionaires, it's oil companies. Like, there's so much that could be done to actually resolve this versus looking at individuals that are probably coming from like a economic background where they don't have just like unlimited money to spend on all this food. If I'm looking to go buy something that is nutrient dense, like fish and meat are pretty nutrient dense. If I want to eat chickpeas, I'm probably gonna have to get a bunch of other stuff to like make this a complete meal, and I don't want to do that. And if you feel like that's me, like not being a good environmentalist, like so be it. But I just think veganism is like a hard sell now with like the ethical side of it. And I also think there's like this weird like raw meat, like raw milk side of the internet. Like there's this rise of like trad wives and like I want to eat all natural and the government's poisoning us, you know? I think that certainly has kind of been brewing for the past like few years. And I think when that stuff has started to come up, I think you see less vegan voices on the internet. I think people don't buy into that as more, and like this kind of return to like how our ancestors used to eat, like ethos is pretty appealing just because I think people have a pretty anti-government stint as is. Like a lot of people don't trust the food system, the pharmaceutical industry, like myself included. And so when we look at like food options, I'm thinking of like the Beyond Burger, right? A bunch of ingredients you can't pronounce. It's supposed to taste like meat, but it's not meat. I think initially a lot of people thought like this is a cool, innovative product for like people that are vegan or maybe ethically don't want to eat meat. But then once you looked at the ingredients and thought about it from like a health perspective, I think a lot of people are like, why would I eat this with all these different like oils, emulsifiers, added ingredients, natural random product or ingredients in it versus eating the real thing? So I certainly think those things together have kind of, you know, created less like demand for veganism. And I also think too, like the restrictive tendencies that can arise from eating a vegan diet. And once again, this is not to say veganism is going to make you be restrictive or anything, but certainly restricting a lot of food groups is probably not going to be best for someone who's had restrictive past with eating disorders. And I think a lot of young women, this is just like a very bold claim I want to make, a lot of young women that had eating disorders in their early years, I think had, you know, veganism in their life at some point. And veganism is a very easy way to continue your restrictive tendencies. When I was vegan, I will honestly say, like, there were a few times when I would say, like, oh, I can't have this because I'm vegan. And I totally could have found an option. I totally could have eaten something, but it was a easier cop out than saying, I don't want to eat this. Why? Like, why won't you eat this? And like make people think I have a problem with food. I would use the veganism as a cover for that. And I think like a lot of people openly and honestly like wouldn't say that. Like when I was vegan, I don't think I would admit that out loud. I'd be like, no, it's a choice. And like I like eating plant foods. And certainly 90% of the time I was happy with veganism. But I think those 10% like hard times when the bad food tendencies would come up, I think veganism was pretty easy for me to use as like a method of restriction. And I think for me, like why I'm no longer vegan, I think the nutritional gap component, as I spoke about earlier, I think I was not starting to feel my best. And it's not to say that veganism is going to make you feel bad. I was playing college athletics and like a pretty good athlete during that time when I was vegan. So I still think you can be in optimal health. But I think I just got sick of taking supplements. I got sick of thinking about every meal, sick of missing out on food experiences. I think the one thing that kind of that like definitely propelled me out of my eating disorder was just getting more comfortable with social eating. And I think when I had this like flashlight on me when I would eat out at different you know parties or occasions and I always had like an excuse or like I'm vegan, I need a substitute, it felt like just like a bad almost like I don't know, environment for me to be in. Like, as someone who had an eating disorder, now people are kind of looking at me and my food choices, and it felt like there was a huge, just like, light on me. But that was a total, like, a personal thing. But I think having the opportunity, you know, to eat out, have different food experiences, and just being more relaxed in my approach to food definitely helped me, like, finally, like, kick my eating disorder out of my, like, life, you know? So that was some of, like, the reasons why I decided to not be vegan anymore.
Yeah, I stopped being vegan kind of around the same time as Kate. And truthfully, like when I went into like veganism, it was more for, like Kate mentioned, like environmental reasons. And yes and no, kind of like the animal ethics, but it was primarily environmental reasons. And I think like over time I kind of realized like, okay, I'm probably not actually making much of an impact, especially since like so much of my food is like coming in, you know, plastic packaging and like all this other stuff. And like who knows like how many miles away like this thing was produced or where the ingredients were sourced. And I just noticed kind of over time that I like wasn't really feeling satiated or full for my meals. And I'm not saying that like veganism like can't be a satiating and fulfilling diet. And I definitely think, you know, with veganism, it is a diet at the end of the day. And so like not every diet's going to work for everyone. And I think like for a certain time in my life when I was vegan, like it was really great for me. And it was like the maybe not like the best diet, but it was like a good diet for me in that moment. And like our bodies are constantly changing in terms of like what we need, especially as like women as we get older and like, you know, are evolving and, you know, growing and maturing and just becoming like women versus like young girls. Like our needs and nutritional profiles and like what we need to consume is going to like change. And so once I kind of got a little bit older, I was like, okay, I actually also want to start caring about like my health in terms of like longevity. And that's when I think a lot of research was starting to come up and a lot of podcasts. Hosts were starting to talk about the importance of like protein for women, et cetera. And that was kind of a wake up call of like, oh, holy crap. Like, I have not even like paid attention once to like my macronutrient breakdown, like what micronutrients I'm even getting. I was really just solely focused on like eating vegan food. And I was like, as long as it's all vegan, then like I must be healthy and fine. And like, you know, I soon realized that like that's not necessarily the case. And so I think it's like important for anyone, whether you're vegan or not, to like allow yourself the opportunity to, you know, ebb and flow between like diets if you want or you will, or like how you eat and like what your meals are comprised of. I'm sure like again, like I said, veganism is probably very great for some people. And, you know, if it's not working out for you, that doesn't make you like weak or a failure. And I don't really view anything wrongly in terms of like myself and like my willpower or like my motivation or drive for breaking away from veganism. I think also similarly to Kate, like no one in my family was vegan. So like I was always having to cook all my own meals. And like we both grew up in the Midwest where like, yes, there was like a few vegan restaurants in Omaha, but I always felt guilty to like drag my family there or like make my parents like, you know, make another like vegan option for me. And I just like wanted to stop being so stressed out. Or like when my grandparents would be like, hey, Emma, we want to take you out for dinner. I would almost like spiral because I'd be like, oh my God, there's like nothing on the menu. Like, how am I going to like find a way to order a meal that's like quote unquote vegan friendly? And I was just like so tired of like this like unnecessary stress. And once I kind of allowed myself to start incorporating meat and dairy, A, nothing really changed my body at all from going from vegan to non-vegan. But I just like felt so much more like happier and so much more at peace just knowing that like wherever I went to eat, I would be able to have something. And I was just starting to feel much more fuller because I was eating, you know, more protein and probably a lot more healthier fats. Because when I was vegan, it was primarily high carb, low fat.
Yeah, and I think too, like I had more fun cooking. Not to say once again that like you can't have fun cooking being vegan, because veganism definitely introduced me to so many more ways to eat fruits and vegetables, and also all of the micronutrients, like, and just different health foods within veganism, like that were popular. I never knew what chia seeds were. I never knew what hemp seeds were, but when I saw them on all the smoothie bowls, I was like, ooh, what are these foods I have like physically never seen before? So I think it was good for me to go vegan. And then almost like reintroduce meat. And like now, like it's funny, when I remember I went vegan or went unvegan, we shall say, what do I say? Like no longer vegan. I don't know, retired my veganism. I called my mom and I was like, hey, so like, how do I cook fish? And my mom, you know, from the Midwest, like grew up on a farm, like eating meat, all the things. She was like, how the fuck are you my daughter? Like, what do you mean you don't know how to cook fish? Or I think it was more like, I don't know how to cook an egg. That's what it was. And she was like, how do you not know how to fucking cook an egg? First of all, Google it before you call me. And second of all, like, what do you mean? And I think it was this new process to learn how to like cook eggs, meat, fish, which is kind of like clown behavior to say. But I also had the background of like making cashew cheese and like making all the weird hippie stuff and knowing those ingredients. So I think it became a lot more fun to cook, to like have new things like in the kitchen as well. And if you are someone that is in like the vegan world and you want to sort of reintroduce like some of the foods I mentioned, once again, I'm not telling anyone you have to be vegan, not vegan, but if you are, I mentioned this in the intro, but digestive enzymes are a good thing to look into. Do your own research on like if you need them, why you need them, whatever. But they're a way to reintroduce your body to meats, which are a pretty like dense and like large food. And if your body is not eating that for 4 years, it's going to kind of forget like how to process that and how to break it down your stomach. Digestive enzymes are something that helps, you know, that stomach acid, like breaking down meat and stuff that you're not used to, as I said. You want to start eating like less heavy foods and get into more dense foods when you are kind of transitioning. So thinking about stuff like eggs and yogurt, and then you're going to do fish, and then you're going to do meat, just to make sure your body can digest these things and you're not like going from eating like all broccoli to eating all meat. Like your stomach will be hurting if you do that. And then I'm also just curious, as like an outro to this section, like I'm curious if the younger listeners are interested in veganism, or if you had a similar kind of moment with veganism, because I do feel like Emma and I were on probably the younger side of people that did experience like the high carb, low fat veganism. And I don't really know what Gen Alpha is doing, or if Gen Alpha listens to the pod, or if you guys are too young, but like, do you guys believe in like the voting with your dollar bullshit of like, I want to go vegan to, save the planet? Or was that not even something on your radar? Because it is interesting how, I'm not saying veganism is a trend, but it certainly was a trending moment, like when Emma and I were fully in it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny how like in fashion there's always like the 20-year like trend cycle, and it's in health and wellness there are definitely trends that come and go, and I am curious if we'll swing the pendulum back again to veganism, but time will tell. We're going to switch gears now and not talk about veganism and instead talk about technology and increasing your attention span. I was kind of inspired to do a little research here after reading an article or listening to a podcast recently that was touching on this particular subject, and it probably comes as a surprise, and we all know it, that like technology and the constant notifications and pings on our phones are really zapping our attention span and really sidetracking us from all of our tasks. And this is something that I think a lot of us complain about and know is like bad and unhealthy for us, but we don't really know how to get out of it and almost like remove ourselves from this like constant like need or desire to like constantly be tapped in, and like how to better improve our attention span, because it is so addictive. We as a society have built such an unhealthy habit of constantly picking up our phones and multitasking, and really these particular habits are causing just like information overload and are really decreasing focus across the board for everyone in our society. And I'm also very curious like how this is going to impact like young students and students not just like in college per se or high school, but even like in elementary school and like those really early fundamental like developmental stages of their life. My mom's a teacher, and something that she's mentioned is that so many of these kids are now just on iPads all the time, and so they have really, really poor dexterity skills. They don't have like really proper grip strength, and so they can't like hold on to pencils or crayons and color anymore, which I think is like really, really sad. And whenever you're going out to eat, you do see kids just like watching television on their like parents' iPad. And I am curious how that will impact their attention span down the road. And social media is definitely like one of the biggest things to blame here, just because we're all so highly dependent, and all these, corporations and tech companies that do create social media, like they purposely make it addictive for us so that we, don't sign off and that we're constantly utilizing their service and having a profile. And, it's almost not even like our fault that we do feel this like constant need to stop what we're doing, whether it's at work, to like constantly check our phone. And a lot of the times we're not even realizing that we are doing it. And it's because we do actually experience a small hit of dopamine each time we check our phone. And so it's really making our brains want more and more and more and crave more of it. And so each time we do this, while also doing a more serious task, whether that's like doing Excel shit or like creating some sort of deck for work, this really forces your brain to qu pivot quite quickly. And this then results in like a speed and qual and a decline in the speed and quality of our work. And I think too, like a lot of us don't even realize that we are checking our phone again, because it's like such an unhealthy, like natural habit for most of us. Like even when we're in line at the grocery store, or like when you're at a red light, you probably aren't even realizing that you're picking up your phone. And that's maybe something that you're not even like intending to do in the moment, but it's just like such a natural thing for you. Even like when I'm waiting on the subway, it could be like 2 or 3 minutes, and like I should just like stand there and be there with my own thoughts, but instead it's like my phone is almost like a security blanket, and I'm like, well, I might as well check, three, four, five apps, even though I know I just checked that 5 minutes ago and likely nothing has changed. I'm kind of getting into our like attention span and like how technology has severely impacted this. I know a lot of people are like, you'll hear a lot of people say on the internet like, oh, I can't even like watch like a 10-minute YouTube video because like my brain is like rotten from like TikTok, and I only have the attention span for like some sort of video that's 15 seconds. There's definitely truth to this. Our average attention span has actually dropped down to 8.5 seconds versus back in 2000 when it was 12 seconds. And I think one thing that's important to like kind of call out about this, like statistic is that in 2000, this is really the year when technology really started to take over. And it's just so shocking that, like, in just 24 years, that our attention span has dropped that quickly. And I'm definitely curious to see, like, how this further declines, as technology only continues to advance and as things only start to get, like, more rapid in speed. And the reason that, like, attention span and why this is, like, pretty bad for our society is that, like, obviously a low attention span makes us less present with others. So many of us, like, almost don't even know how to hold conversations anymore. And so many of us feel so much more comfortable being on, like, these, like, online community spaces, which definitely have a lot of pros, but also has a lot of negativity as well. And so when we have this low attention span, many of us are probably zoning out when, like, a friend or a coworker or, like, someone that we're on a date with is, like, talking, and, like, they could be very passionate about it, and you're just, like, maybe not being as fully engaged as you would like to be. And also just, like, takes away from being in the moment. We know that, technology and, like, how we interact with it's, like, ne negatively impacting our productivity, and it's also harder to retain information. And so now we all just have to work so much harder to stay focused and really, stay away and, like, almost have this willpower to stay away from the temptation of constantly checking our phone. But all that is to say is that, our brains are pretty magical in the sense of, like, none of this is really permanent. And so there are ways to improve or increase your attention span. And so I'm going to go through a short list. The first is going to be just, like, removing the device to eliminate the temptation. Really, like, placing the phone screen down is not really ever enough. And I know this is so true for me. So whether you're studying or you have, like, some sort of thing that you got to do for work, consider putting your phone in another room where you cannot even see it, because it's even, like, just seeing your phone right there can just be enough of a temptation for you to check and pick it up if you just, like, know that it's near you. And this all just comes down to muscle memory. Another thing that you can do to help increase your attention span is limiting how often you are switching between tasks. An average worker switches their tasks around 1,200 times a day, which is, like, kind of an absurd number, but, like, I do definitely believe, and I'm sure it's even higher than that for most people. A 2005 observational study found that office workers spend an average of only 11 minutes working on a project before switching to another. And granted, like, the switching may be unavoidable depending on the job, but, a lot of us probably do have ample time in the day, especially a lot of us, as, we are working entry-level jobs where we're not, like, caught up in back-to-back meetings all the time. A lot of us can find ways to actually complete a task in full before moving on to the next thing. And whether that's, trying time blocking or just following through with something before jumping to the next task, even taking a short pause between a task can help your brain sort of, like, take a pause, take a breath, and realize, okay, we completed one thing, now we're moving to the other. Another thing is just, like, setting goals. Attention is, like, definitely your attention and attention span is definitely goal seeking. So being reminded of, like, what you want to achieve can help motivate you. I know for me, it's like I just feel like my eyes and ears and just, like, my brain is, like, fully rotten after the end of the day, just because I'm constantly, like, moving back and forth to my phone and computer, et cetera. And it, like, really does feel like you have no brain cells. And so for me, it's like I want to feel, like, more present. I want to feel like I have more of a brain and, like, more articulate, just because I feel like the more I spend on my phone and, like, less actually being engaged with others, I just feel like I lose a lot of that skill, which is, like, sad. Another thing you can do is, like, meditating. So just, like, generally forcing yourself to slow down and be without distractions. A lot of studies have shown that this can increase attention, even if it's just for 10 minutes. And I think for me, one of my biggest, like, recommendations is, like, just starting to read more. The more you read and are engaged with a book, you're going to feel more rewarded. You're rewarding more focus than distraction, that is. And it really forces the brain to flex certain parts that are tied to sustained attention. And we know that reading has proven to increase memory too. And I just, like, naturally feel better about myself when I read. So I'm happy that I'm, like, back into kind of reading a book every week to 2 weeks. And I just, like, feel like my vocabulary is stronger and I'm retaining information better. And it is just, like, such a good feeling. And it can be really hard to get back into reading after you take a long extended break. And so it's kind of like exercise. You just got to kind of keep on doing it for it to not feel like a task or a burden. And I think I kind of want to get into supplements. Granted, you cannot supplement your way out of, like, brain fog or poor concentration, but there are things that can really fire those neurons. But of course, like, these are going to help. But if you're not doing, like, a lot of, like, the bigger, deeper work. Like these aren't really going to make much of an impact. And again, I think that's like one of the frustrations with health and wellness is that people think like the supplement's going to save me, but it's like, no, you also have to like put in the work. The supplement isn't going to be the only thing. It'll help you, but it's not going to be the thing that cures you. So one that I'm sure everyone knows, lion's mane. This is considered the smart mushroom. The girlies love lion's mane. It's one of the best adaptogens for the brain to support cognition. And it's because a lot of the benefits of lion's mane are believed to come from the nerve growth factors found within the mushroom. And lion's mane contains two compounds that can stimulate the growth of brain cells. There's been a few animal studies that have found that it can help protect against Alzheimer's disease as well and reduce symptoms of memory loss. Another is going to be caffeine. So the Journal of European Behavioral Pharmacology Society found that caffeine improves attention on both simple and complex tasks. Coffee is a central nervous system stimulant, so it can center your focus and improve concentration. A lot of people that have ADHD, it's very common for them to actually be prescribed some sort of like caffeine supplement. And generally, our attention span will peak after 40 minutes, 45 minutes of intake of caffeine. So again, that can be coffee, green tea, what have you. Next, fatty acids and omega-3s are really just like any like good, like brain healthy superfood. Omega-3 fatty acids, for example, can help build and repair brain cells, and the antioxidants help reduce cellular stress and inflammation. So, a few examples are going to be like sardines, salmon, and flaxseed. And DHA, which is a type of omega-3, is really the main form that promotes cognition the most. And you're generally going to find DHA omega-3 in fatty fish. And again, too, like the brain is a very energy intensive organ. It's using around 20% of our body's daily calories. So it needs plenty of good fuel to maintain concentration throughout the day. So even if you don't feel like you're constantly checking your phone, but you just feel like this general sense of like brain fog or that you can't like concentrate for long periods of time, it could just be a sign that like your body just like needs more fuel. I know when like I was like probably under eating or when I was an anorexic, it was really hard for me to like stay focused or concentrated. And it was probably because like my body just like needed more food in its system. And I know that like now when I do have something that's very like nutrient dense, like some medjool dates with almond butter, I do feel so much better and so much more focused. And so if you're someone who's like in school and you're sitting all day, you may not feel like, oh, I need to be like eating more because I'm just like sitting. But it's like if you're taking really, really hard classes and if you're studying for exams or even like at work, if you're like trying to do some like really stressful project or whatever it may be, like that is like utilizing so much energy and you need to like make sure that you're properly fueling yourself. And I think a lot of people tend to forget that, and rightfully so, because that's not something that's like generally talked about when it comes to like metabolism and whatnot.
Sorry, my mic fell fucked up. I was gonna say with attention span, it's kind of a I mean, I was thinking about Gen Alpha, as you mentioned earlier, whenever I get those TikToks that are like, kids don't know their like parents' phone number anymore, or kids don't know how to write. I always think like, oh, maybe we're not gonna need those things in the future because we're always gonna have technology, you know. Like I try to think maybe the kids are just prepared for the world we're gonna live in that has so much technology. But it is awful to think about, like, whenever I do see kids on their iPads at dinner, when I do think about how distracted we all are. I truly think that, like, all of us wish we could log off, but it's kind of like we don't know how to do that because all of us would just have to, like, agree upon a moment when we all choose to do that. So hopefully we just throw our phones in the river one day collectively and maybe we can get our attention spans back.
Yeah, what are those kids? They're like called Luddites. They're
Oh,
like
yeah.
young Gen Alpha kids that are like, I don't want any part in like social
Like
media
being
and whatnot. So
online,
they all
yeah.
have like they just have like flip phones and like listen to like CDs. And I think it's like
Yeah.
kind of amazing. Not that like that's gonna go mainstream, but you know, there is hope.
There's hope for the next generation. Yeah, I definitely think our generation will raise our kids differently. I've had that conversation like with a few people. Like, yeah, I would not give my kid a smartphone until X age. And I think millennials were a little bit more lax because they didn't like have social media at such a young age to know how brain rotten it will make you. So I'm curious kind of like what will happen once our generation has children, if we do have children, on this planet we live in. So yeah, happy Earth Day, boys and girls, on that note. But thanks for listening to CMOS Girlies. We hope you are having a beautiful Tuesday wherever this podcast finds you. As I mentioned in the intro, we won't be having a pod next week. I'm so sorry, but hopefully the memes of the week will bring you a lot of joy and we'll be back in the following. So see you guys later.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.